Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell and Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio. We are excited. We have Christoph Irwin with Positive Energy here today. We're going to talk about some fun things about how to keep your house at a really great, healthy level. And just to talk a little bit about how Christoph and I met, it was back when I had first started my firm in Austin, and we met at this kind of networking thing where you would go to these lunch things and just meet people you didn't know. And I think that was the only one I went to. And we actually met each other, and then we built some houses together. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And Christoph
and look where it led.
Yeah. And you had just moved here from Virginia or
from Maryland.
Yeah. We also discovered we're both Terps. Yay.
University of Maryland. Oh, I'd forgotten that.
And so, it was all these coincidences, and it was really fun doing projects with you. I still have some on my website, so the Haskells.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, then it kind of – well, we had the recession, and there was nothing to be built, and then you had come up with this great company, Positive Energy, right? Tell us how you kind of got that going.
Yeah, well, thank you, and thank you again for having me on your show. So with me, I actually left Maryland as an electrophysicist, I guess you could say. That was my career. And I was hired at UT Austin to do that, and just got, for whatever reason, disillusioned on making weapon systems. And so didn't do that. And I'd always been a bit of a carpenter and a handyman. Met this amazing woman, this other Diane in my life, who's now my wife, 19 years ago. We've known each other a while, Diane.
We have.
And so we built a house together. We remodeled a 1920s bungalow, and I just kept that going. Actually, my neighbors kept that going. They're like, hey, it looks pretty good. Can you come do my hardwood? Can you come remodel my kitchen? And I had quit my job. I didn't know what was next for me. And I did that for about a year and a half. And I said, maybe this is what's next for me. I'll just start building houses. And that's when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the important fact here is that when you're an electrophysicist, you make things that have to do what you want them to do, that the output, the outcome, the function is so important. I mean, like I built a linear accelerator that was the size of a small locomotive engine. And if it didn't work, right, years of work went for nothing.
Right.
And so when I started building houses, I had that mindset of, well, what does this thing do? And yeah. So I started reading, and I quickly found building science. But being, I really find safety in the world through relational belonging. I love people. I love communication. Mm-hmm. I started to realize what this thing that we call a house does is it is a place where we raise our families and we spend time together. And ultimately, we're trying to, like, the output of a house is a healthy, that's an important thing, happy, there's comfort, a member of society. Healthy, happy members of society is, I think, what we produce through houses, ideally.
I love that. Yeah, we both said that at the same time. Yeah, I love that. I completely agree. I think I think a lot about what I do as an interior designer. I write a lot about it. That's how I investigate it. I think about dwellings and dwelling spaces throughout history and throughout time. And I think about the relationship of what how a house brings people together and how it puts them back out into the world. And so I love that you said it that way. It's a beautiful way to hear that. It's absolutely true. And interesting that you say you had to think about, maybe that's a good way. I'll take a page from your book with that, probably, to talk to clients then about why it's not just decorating or interior design.
Oh my goodness, no.
It's so much more than that. Thanks for that.
I would say I saw that early on with how, we would design the balustrades in the houses we did, and just paying attention to all the different details and how everything worked. So it definitely is so you and carries through everything.
And I don't know what it was about you and Diane and I, the other Diane and
yeah,
I.
Yeah, right.
But it's like you could do the Vulcan mind meld and just read us. And frankly, we were interested in craftsman style bungalows, which they're kind of like the anti, there's an expression in French, m'as-tu vu? Mm-hmm. Have you seen me? You know, have you? And it's mainly like, have you seen me looking good? Mm-hmm. And craftsman style is more like down to earth. And you really read yeah. that. And I really appreciated that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the glass and steel. It wouldn't make the cover of Dwell.
No, but the thing is they feel good. I mean, I still have people requesting those houses. I mean, yeah. people love the feel of them, right? I mm-hmm. mean, the materials, the quality of light, the scale. And Amity and I have talked about how some of those, you know, modern and contemporary houses just don't have that scale, and you don't want to be in some of those spaces at all, and you cringe and go to the corners and the shorter yeah. ceilings.
Mm-hmm. So, it's like yeah. trying to feel warm in the Apple Store or something.
I just wrote a podcast, a blog called The C Word, all about comfort and then how that has become or has been a lot of times in my industry, interior design, kind of made to feel unimportant, whether it's comfortable or not, or how pedestrian of you to ask the question, if I will be comfortable sitting in this chair, it's the look of the chair that matters. Or, and so, you know, while of course we want our the things our eyes land on when we're in our spaces to be beautiful and to speak to us and feel like they are in some way part of us, or we feel connected, they also do have to provide a comfortable home for the scale of humanity, what human bodies are and how they function. And, you know, bad design doesn't do that. Good design takes into account I always like to say a room is built to hold people, not things. And then the furniture is built to hold the people. And so those things have to come together well. But not to forget, too, that with the architecture of it, you know, I love that moment where the architecture and the interiors come together with the way that the building is pierced with glass or passageways or openings, and kind of all of that really has to be thought through at one time. You know, there's no way to design in a vacuum one area without thinking about the connection to each other. And then, yes, to the people who live in the spaces. So,
yeah, it's like the design process. It's like you're holding in your hands this multi-dimensional Rubik's Cube, and every gesture that might improve one outcome, you need to think, how is it going to affect the other outcomes? And yeah. frankly, most of the practices that are mainstream now are directed toward the outcome of visual aesthetics and low first cost. We've yes. optimized that. We deliver movie sets to society.
Yes.
Right. Doesn't so it true. Look like a nice house? Don't look behind the walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often say that. You know,
we're getting past that.
You're a stage designer, not a home designer. Mm-hmm. You're building a mm-hmm. stage that looks good in a photograph versus building a home that's gonna stand up. So, I think we're all on the same page with the way we think about what it is that we do. But what in particular do you do? What do you do?
That's a good yeah. question. So, Positive Energy is a group of consultants and engineers that really follow our mission statement, which is to change the way society thinks about, that's the first step, and then delivers indoor space to itself. And so we work with architects like you guys, engineers, interior designers, homeowners. And our goal is really to make everyone very clear of this really important and often overlooked fact. The design process itself, who says what to who and when, that is a technology that can be improved to deliver outcomes. And keep in mind, we're trying to deliver healthy, functional, happy people to society. And fundamentally, everyone knows that we're kind of selecting, curating, you could even say, we're curating materials to create an experience for our clients. And here's the thing that I think Positive Energy has many years ago, pre-pandemic, woken up to. That the one material that is left out is often the air, right? A typical house holds several thousand pounds of air, and it is invisible. And we are kind of soaking in it and immersed in it all the time. So it's easy to be like, oh yeah, whatever. And I'll just stop there just to say that what we do is we think about health and comfort. And we also, because I could go deep into the air quality thing, but so health, comfort, durability, efficiency, and really resilient energy and water systems for the last several years have been really big. And all of it's wrapped in a process, right? So we want to consult with architects and their owners early in the process while the design is still fluid and make sure we're mapping in the right direction, right? This is more than visual spatial. There's lots of things that need to be mapped out.
Interesting. So your consultants, you have consultants that have specialties in different areas. I mean, what talk to me about what that diversity is.
We have architects on staff, okay. Engineers on staff, and building science consultants on staff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, have you guys talked to your audience about building science?
No, not yet.
We haven't. Why don't we do that now? Yeah.
I'll try to keep it short. So
I'd love to hear it.
So building science. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I'm glad I get to talk about this. Building science is simply the sciences applied to homes and buildings. I mean, fundamentally, like thermodynamics, fluid dynamics, physics, chemistry, biology, geology, right? All you know, the reality exists and you're putting a home in it. Home is reality, in reality. And most recently, the building science community is starting to recognize that, oh my goodness, we've hit this really weird place where the physical sciences are actually significantly evolved past what we're doing in our homes, right? We know how to make homes that last hundreds of years. We know how to make homes that are literally like health interventions for a family. We know how to make homes that will make perfect thermal comfort, that have no glare, optimal daylighting, you know, all these things. But we don't avail ourselves of many of these, this knowledge base. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to think things like you, like this podcast, this is information flow. We're trying to have more and more people understand that, oh, there's a far more sophisticated systems-based view of this.
Yeah, that's basically.
That was a little sprawling.
Yeah, no, but it is exactly what, as we work with clients, we meet them where they are and wherever that is and what their understanding is of what it is they're about to take on, whether doing a renovation, an addition, or a new build. And we try to make sure that we speak to them in a way that they can understand what we're trying to do for them and that we always have their best interest at heart. And then there's just such a vast world of options and opportunities and consultants and that we have already vetted and gone through and know to bring to them. Like I say, we have their best interest at heart as we go. But it can be a long process for them to get where we want them to be, to understand why certain decisions are being made. And kind of also being the go-between and the person that's, as an interior designer and as the architect too, we just need to explain to them. Sometimes the builder gets ahead of themselves with their doing things the way they're doing things. And we want the client to be inquisitive and to understand how things are built and why they're built the way they're built, but not too much either, because sometimes they just need to trust us that, we've thought these things through and there is a science behind it. But for that, we have to make sure that the builder that we're working with is building, you know, what we do, custom home design for people in their homes, not commercial. That's not what we do. We have done some, but that's not our wheelhouse. Is what our best practices at the time. We kind of have to make sure that they understand and know what they're doing as builders. And so we have to know a certain amount, but we can't know everything. So we have to have people. So where do you enter in? Say, for instance, would it be like at what point do you enter into the process in working with, say, Diane, when you've worked with her in the past or now for the kind of work that we do?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking. I feel like we're doing a little commercial for my company, which is great.
I hope I asked the right. I don't know what I just said, but I'm sure it's fine.
I would like to point out. Go ahead, Diane.
I said basically how, when do we bring Christoph in and his company to, and it's early on in the design, it really does help. And sometimes we have clients that really care about this stuff, and then sometimes we have some that have no idea they're supposed to care about it. So it's the ones that really are interested, they want to get to it right away. It's always very interesting, right?
Right. So Amity, in your statement there, right, so we make sure the builder knows what they're doing. What's happening fundamentally in the building world, especially in custom residential, is the trades, the builder and the trades are supposed to be the recipients of the knowledge, right? And specifically, they're supposed to know how to plan, i.e. design the systems they're installing. Really, their role, you know, think about architect and builder, right? You and interior designer, right? You two are the design function. And then there's the implementation function, right? In a very analogous way. So one way to think of positive energy, which is completely accurate, is we design mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems, right? So we're MEP engineers. We're, you know, I'm a PE. We stamp our plans and we design home systems. But what we also do is we go far upstream from that, so that when you're in concept, we're interviewing your owner and we're saying, what type of passive systems? So that's the foundation systems, the wall systems, the roof systems are appropriate for the outcomes that this owner wants, right? There's these jargony terms in architecture where we could say we translate the owner's project requirements. Like, what do they want this home to do? What do they want to experience in this home? We translate that to a basis of design. Here's your wall assembly, right? Here is your hot water distribution system. I don't know if you know, but there's all this foment right now about what type of water heater is best. Heat pumps for sure is the answer. If anyone's not doing that, please just get past yourself. It's
heat pumps. Wait, heat pumps
but
for?
For heating water.
Oh, okay.
Heat pump water heaters. But the delivery system itself, like, you know, like here's a tank full of hot water. I'm showing my little coffee cup. Mm-hmm. Well, how we made the hot water, yes, it's important. But how we distribute the hot water, that is most of the time more important, and no one gives it any thought. So no one designs those systems. That's just an example of how we engage. So we would engage early on with passive systems, active systems. Active systems, they provide thermal comfort, so they heat and cool the house. And that's where most people leave it. But more importantly, they ventilate the house. They dehumidify or humidify the house, and they filter the air in the house. If we don't filter the air, right? Filtration is such a obvious example of how far astray we've gone from what you want, which is to design around people, which is we say, oh, you know when we should filter the air for the people in the home to breathe clean air? Well, we'll do that whenever it's too hot out and the air conditioner runs, or whenever it's too cold out and the, you know, the heat pump provides heating. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We need to filter the air whenever the house is occupied and people are breathing. So it's just an example.
Interesting.
And so then the last thing we do is resilient systems. So that's solar production, wind production, storage systems, and then water purification systems. I think air and water quality are something that is going under the radar right now and not to our benefit as a society.
You think so? Really? I feel like
goodness.
I feel like people are paying a little bit more attention than they were, say, 20 years ago.
Yes. Well, we have is crumbling,
right?
Infrastructure, right?
Crumbling infrastructure is, yes, it's all falling down around us.
Trillions of dollars of investment do, and that degrades the quality and reliability of water. I'm specifically thinking of water. Mm-hmm. And with air, this is an important perspective. So we've decided as a society that we want to save energy. So what we've done is we've said, oh, buildings use a lot of energy. Let's rethink how we have energy codes for buildings. And so the buildings now, they are much more airtight, which reduces energy. They are much better insulated, and they have much higher quality windows, right? All three of those things in our hot, humid climate, they basically translate into thou shalt run thine air conditioner less, right? Meanwhile, the only system in the home that was drying the air was the air conditioning system, which is running less. So we're still showering, bathing, breathing, producing all the moisture, and we don't dry it as much. And then the indoor microbiome, you know, not just mold, but all sorts of things, mm-hmm. becomes an unhealthy place for us. So it's an example of not thinking in systems.
And about how many times per hour do you think there's supposed to be an air exchange happen?
Oh, my goodness. Five to six would be what we'd want.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the typical home is around 0.5 to 1.5 when you measure it.
And I think, is that the ASHRAE code?
Yeah, 62.2. Okay. ASHRAE 62.2, yeah. There is something going on in Austin and beyond where we ventilate the home using this technology called fiction, where we really just put a 6-inch duct to the outside and we open a damper now and then and we say, okay, that's ventilation. That is completely wrong. I could dig into why, but there are systems that ventilate homes. They're energy recovery ventilators, or you can use ventilating dehumidifiers, but just putting a damper on the return of the air handler, it's sort of like telling your 6-year-old, go wash your hands. and they go run water on it and come back. And you have to stop and say, no, no, go make your hands clean, right? You know, it's not just do something that satisfies the ventilation code. It's like, no, no, what we want is actually clean air and, you know, outside air coming into the home, mm-hmm. not just silly little damper that didn't cost much.
And so basically, if we just put in a regular air conditioning system, it's only going to turn on however often when it's hot, you know, when it's hot outside.
Yeah. On average, year round, around 9 hours a day.
Really tight house, it might not turn on as often. So then you start to create a little bit more of the building sick syndrome stuff that we all were dealing with back in, was it early 2000s, all that started to happen, right?
Yeah. Even there's a funny, like we call it sick building syndrome, mm-hmm. which is an example of language, right? You know, we call some people insurgents and other people freedom fighters, right? So we say sick building syndrome. It's like, excuse me, the buildings aren't sick. Let's call it sick people syndrome. Like this building is making people sick. But yeah, we've better living through chemistry, you know, chemistry will save us. And chemistry and biology in our homes are inappropriate for human yeah. health.
So when we have those old, lovely Craftsman style bungalows that we love, and they're so drafty, and man, that has a lot of air exchange going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, yeah. So, Amity, it looks like you want to say something.
No, I just am thinking about my my face is very expressive, so I will be kind of my studio that I work out of is okay. 1901, and what yeah. I'm sitting here thinking is it's so leaky. You know, there's new windows.
I mean, it's built in. It's from 1901.
It was built in yeah. 1901. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it was built in 1901. Anyway, and it's really stuffy, and so just opening and closing windows during the day to try to keep it regulated. It's just such a fight. And so I'm just thinking through this. And then I live in a 1970s renovation that has new windows, and that space feels really airtight. And my husband's convinced it's not healthy, and there's not enough air exchange. And so I'm just, you're seeing on my face kind of concern for my own health and just, you know, where do you go when you're in that situation? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And it's well-founded, Amity, actually. I mean, I don't want to run around sounding like Chicken Little, but I have studied this for many years. So there's like two extremes, right? We don't want to fall in the ditch in the left. We don't want to fall in the ditch in the right. We want to do well. So your 1970s home, prior to these ineffectual dampers, you know what we did for ventilation? Nothing.
Oh.
Just nothing. And so that didn't work either. And these old drafty Craftsman style homes, right? We think, oh, that's pretty good that we had it better. That is better if you don't care about energy use. If you say, you know what, let's continue to use this guy as a sewer and it's fine. That works out. It's like, well, but I have kids and I want them to be able to have kids. So I think it's well founded to say we do need to recognize that the earth, however large it is, it's finite. And so are its resources. And
sure.
But the mm-hmm. idea that I have had big builders tell me many times as a consultant, they say, son, a building's got to breathe. I guess they would call you little ladies or something.
Yeah, probably.
This idea of building's got to breathe, you know, right away. First of all, that has nothing to do with air. That's vapor, water vapor moving right. through materials. Second of all, the people have to breathe and, you know, you want the building to breathe. So if you have a leaky home, what you're doing is you're taking air from outside, which is mostly hot and humid in our climate, and you're bringing it into the wall cavities where it's going to shed a lot of its moisture load because the water is going to start to condense out, start to absorb, mm-hmm. adsorb and absorb into the materials. Now you've created damp building conditions. Now you have the recipe to feed things, all yeah. sorts of little critters, which attract bigger critters. They poop in there, they die in there. And then as the air moves through, you pick up, like, I don't know if you know, but chitin, like fingernails, like C-H-I-T-I-N, we are off the charts allergic to it. When you pull air through the gaps, nooks and crannies in your home from outside to inside, that's what you bring in. You entrain desiccated, you know, I'll call them critters, right? To be polite, you know, their bodies, their exoskeletons, their poop. That's what you're pulling into the home. And we say, oh, this is great. This is how it used to be. And that's why it's good. I'll just stop.
No.
No, it's not good.
Yeah. And then making it too tight is the other extreme. Exactly right. Like we cannot live in insulated Tupperware boxes. You know, we know that. So
who's in charge out there? You're making me nervous. Like, how do we fix this? Who's in charge?
Big dollar rules, right? Yeah. And production builder tactics and strategies. I mean, I've just had a couple of consultations where the production builders, so we have a housing shortage, yes. right? So anything that gets built sells, right? So all this stuff about Energy Star and going better. What's happened is Energy Star needed to be like the whole industry needed to take a step forward in unison and improve and up their game. Well, that was really happening about 10 years ago. Builder after builder was learning about Energy Star, was learning about LEED. And there's so much more, right?
Just and that, just so people listening know, green, that referred to making your house really energy efficient, sustainable, all those
right.
kinds of things.
And it was checklist based and there were flaws, but generally it was improving. But what's happened now is one by one, builders are backing off from those aspirations to do better. And what happens? Their homes get cheaper. They command more market share. Their competitors say, I need to also capitulate to this market norm. So it is a rough time for high quality homes. And so what happens is we as a society like nice stuff. When we're getting a home, we're getting low first cost visual, not really nice stuff. And we don't want to know, right? We just put up blinders, right? We don't want to know.
Yeah, it's easier to just go along and think, you know, kind of put your blinders on and just go.
It'll work out, yeah, right? And it will work out, right? You'll end up at the allergist or with, you know, heart disease or some sort of inflammatory issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to be really clear about the path here. So right now, you guys are sitting in a room. I'm sitting in a room. There's a few hundred pounds of air around us. And we're soaking in it, right? We're literally marinating in it. We know what happens when we marinate meat. It takes on the flavor. Transdermal uptake of pollutants is very real and very powerful. We are soaking in chemicals into our blood. Mm-hmm. If that's not like convincing enough, 12 to 16 times a minute, 30 pounds of air a day, if you're not exercising more, if you're exercising, goes from what you would call not you, the room around
you,
into your blood, which you would call you, right? And so if it carries things in there that mimic hormones, then your endocrine system is messed up. And if you don't think you're using your endocrine system, that's your ability to sleep, your mood, your ability to think straight, right? So, you know, you want to know, and sexual function is in there. You want to know why Viagra is off the charts. It's because air quality is off the charts, heart disease off the charts, inflammatory issues, arthritis, all of these, obesity, all of these correlate to signaling problems. Or the other boot to drop is, I don't know what this stuff is in my blood. I'm going to put my immune system on alert. And you have chronic inflammation.
Yes. Right? This I hear constantly.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where the heart disease comes in. So that's air, right? You know what? We know how to make air clean. You know what? We don't. It's really a riddle. We like nice stuff. But when it comes to air, what we say is, you know, I actually would rather have a bigger home filled with lower quality air. And there are solutions, right? Like you and I, right? We could work together on projects and we could absolutely make that not happen, right? There are systems that do it. And then when it gets taken to the streets, that's when the real challenge happens, right? This is sort of like brain damage for my business model, which is I am not the installing contractor. And, you know, the 20 people that are here with me, we go to national and international conferences. We're not biased by manufacturer rhetoric. We can cut through all the sales crap, like these active air purification systems that are being sold right now. Plasma, ionizer. Stop. They don't work. There's no net benefit. But the point is, when you have a neutral third party that is, their job is to design the systems that lead to the functional outcomes you want, you don't get stuck in, I've asked my plumber, my mechanical installer, my builder altogether, what should I do? Anything that comes out of that person is probably preceded with, given what I know, given what I don't know, given what I can be profitable doing, here's my answer. Mm-hmm. And what's profitable, and many, many builders, in fact, I was in this category for a while. I was a sequencer. Call the foundation guy, you know, call the guy to like cure the lock, call the guy to... The expertise did not reside in me. I was not in any way in control of the outcome in any manner beyond what does it look like.
Mm-hmm. So, right. So then
doesn't sound very positive.
No, it doesn't.
But we can do better.
No, it doesn't actually. No, I'm just kidding. So then, how do you do any sort of? Okay, when you work with your builders, the builders that you work with, is it you're trying to get them to that place where they have a better, broader understanding so that they can move forward positively with the decisions that they make and educate the homeowners that they're building for? Or, you know, how does that work?
Well, we're fortunate that we work with teams, and often the team is led by an architect. A builder is brought in early and the owner is always there. So having the owner, having engaged owner participation, and I don't mean in the, you know, what color is it or how big is the room? I mean, I have allergies. I want my home to be an allergen-free zone. If that is a requirement, that means you need a good air control layer. You need a functional filtration system. You need a ventilation system, right? So yes, it all comes from starting with who's writing the checks here, right? It's the owner. And what does the owner want? And I do admit there are times where the owner says, I just need a house. I don't care if it's good. I don't care if I end up going to my allergist or, you know, having to take Claritin all the time or something like that. And by the way, clean indoor can't remove all your allergies, but it can do a lot. So we're lucky that we have some really good builders. I mean, we've wandered all over the construction industry, the AEC industry, trying to find a business model that sticks. And about 3 years ago, we found it. And it's with these passive active resilient systems consulting services up front. And these are interactive charrettes where we're spinning the home and we're showing you the quality of daylighting. We're showing you thermal comfort profiles and varying window sizes and overhang depths in real time, right, with you and your owner. And then we can move into the mechanical systems. How are we going to heat and cool this? We're going to provide space. How can we, through clever design, streamline construction of this home, right? Even though it's a one-off, like, you know, no one forgets that the car needs an engine and that we need to leave room for it. We do have plans where somebody forgot that they wanted this heated and cooled and there's no mechanical closet, or we stick it in the attic as an afterthought and then we make it out of paper mache and Slinkies wrapped in saran wrap, right? We do crazy things as a society when we build our homes. It's like this mass delusion. I'm way too negative on this interview. I apologize.
Yeah. And of course, oftentimes I leave room for all that and it never seems to be enough.
Yeah,
it's never enough, and they're taking more of my master and closet,
frankly, yeah.
And it's never enough.
It is true, right? Think about the engine in your car. It's pretty big relative to the volume of the car. And I admit, sadly, that when I say, you know, heating and cooling yawn, ventilation, filtration, and dehumidification, that's where the interest is. What did I just do? That's more equipment and more air distribution systems,
yeah.
Right? So, but it is very directly about the benefit of the owners, right? Mm-hmm. So to not leave them a mechanical closet and say, oh, your kitchen's bigger, but your air is less, right? You are never more intimate with your home than when you take it into your blood, right? The air into your blood.
So what is your house like?
Yeah. So I have a 1920s bungalow and it's been remodeled. Uh-huh. We have a decent air control layer that's measured with a blower door, and you want to be less than 5 air changes per hour under test conditions. We're at around 3.5. Most builders that are on their game today are getting around 1 to 2 air changes per hour. Mm-hmm. Passive houses are down far less, you know, 0.6 and less. But I have a heat pump water heater. My gas furnace is still trucking along, but that is going out the door as soon as I can get it. But the big thing that I have is I have a ventilating dehumidifier. Mm-hmm. So it's a box the size of a microwave oven. It costs around $1,800 and it keeps my air dry and it ventilates my house.
Mm,
it's awesome.
Okay.
Where do we get
those? I would
those?
Recommend it to everyone.
Because I'm leaving now to get one on my way home.
I don't know if we're supposed to say manufacturers,
okay,
but you know. Yeah, you can get them anyway. Santa Fe Ultra has some. April Air has some.
I mean, a lot of houses I do today have those. I mean, especially in our climate, right? Mm-hmm. Because their humidity is a big comfort thing. Now, that's something like you were talking about the 100 pounds of water in the air right now and everything. I mean, that is something definitely very tangible to someone. I mean, if it's humid in their house, they're going to complain. If it's too dry in their house, they're going to complain. So there's, you know, what humidity level should we be at?
Yeah, the target range is 40 to 60%. It can go above, like brief excursions above 60 is good, is okay. But fundamentally, yes, air conditioners cool air. That's what they do. Dehumidifiers dry air. That's what they do. And when the ARRA money went through, we just talked about the Great Recession, right? The American Recovery and Restoration Act or something. Air conditioners changed. They were required to get more efficient. And guess how they were rated? Only with cooling. So they had to get more efficient at cooling. Did they get more efficient at drying? No, they got less efficient. So 2008. So someone, you know, son, you know, I've been doing this 30 years. Like, well, sir, the physics of a home changed radically in 2008. And 2009, 12, 15, look at energy code. It's fallen off a cliff, how much energy per square foot we put into a home. Fantastic. But it does mean we need to rethink the systems we used, and the installing contractors didn't get the memo. Yeah. Right. So humidity in the air, if it's humid in here, I can't evaporate water off my skin, which is a very functional way to cool off. My lungs are moist, wet, hot surfaces. When I pull dry air into them, they can shed a lot of heat into that air. So I'm also kind of cooling off by breathing, sweating and breathing, obviously, are the ways you cool off. But you do it, you do both those subtly all the time. I think that humidity is actually the number two big factor in making someone comfortable indoors.
Yeah.
Number one is the temperature of the surfaces around you.
Oh,
just like if you put cold air into a metal pot, the walls of the metal pot get cool. That's how we control. That's how air conditioning works. Air conditioning is not occupant conditioning. If I wanted to just make an occupant comfortable, I'd make the ceiling above me cold or the floor below me warm. And then it would radiate to me, or I would radiate to it, depending on you know, if it was summer or winter. So we use air conditioning to make our window surface less hot, and our wall surface less hot, our ceiling surface. I paused when I said windows because it's not very effective at making your window surface less hot if the sun is hitting the window, right? The sun is just totally overpowering it. Yeah.
So it's interesting. This is just a side thing that as you were talking, I was thinking about something that comes up a lot of times when we're making selections for interior finishes. We talk a lot about feel, how they feel to the touch, to the hand, if they hold heat, if they hold, you know, like what type of kitchen countertops do you want? So how are they going to feel?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the subtleties of it, natural stone versus.
Yeah, we have bamboo in our house.
Yeah, yeah.
It's warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about thermal conductivity, Amity. You can take a take a cylinder of
the
metal and wood.
Sure.
Like if right in front of you on the table, there was a cylinder of wood and a cylinder of metal. They would obviously both be at the same temperature because they're in the room. They've hit equilibrium. Right. You pick up the metal, it's cold. You pick up the wood, it's not. That's thermal conductivity.
Because the metal's taking the warmth out of my hand.
It's conducting thermal energy. That's exactly right.
So yes, that I do know, but I don't say it that way. I just say it feels better to the touch. But for instance, my favorite countertop material is
unless you want to be cool.
Yeah. Well, this is Texas. So anyway, yes. Well, no, I guess that's true. Anyway, whatever. I like soapstone and
wood.
Like
standing on a cold floor could feel good at certain times and others not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great in the summer.
Yeah.
My dogs would lie, you know, in a shade on the tile floor. And
yeah,
not on
when
the wood
I was
floor.
Pregnant, it was so hot. I mean, I could just lay on the kitchen tile floor.
But that's where I start. As you're talking, I'm thinking about what am I naturally drawn to and what do I try to convince clients is going to feel best to sit in or touch. And I like natural stone, and soapstone's my favorite. It's got that sort of talc feel to it, and it's cool. And then cork for floors because it's sound absorbing, and or wood and these things. Sorry, go ahead. You were going to say something.
I have a dovetail here, which is really important.
The materiality of the space. So yeah, you go.
So materiality is again, in terms of comfort, we are very intimate with it, right? There is a material, so the materials are all going to be at a certain temperature. But if there is one that, like, let's say your window surface is hot and it's radiating heat to you, well, you can put a curtain in front of it and then it'll make the curtain hot and that'll interfere with the radiation hitting you. The materials in our spaces, they're all at the same temperature, but they have different emissivities, which means some of them can be hot and not radiate heat. Some of them can be hot and yes, radiate heat. So this concept of a radiant barrier or these solar control films in windows, what they're doing is they're saying this window gets hot, but it doesn't radiate this heat to the occupant as much. And so you as an interior designer, I mean, it would be great to start to think about what is the emissivity of this material? Because if it gets hot and it sends the heat around, like, you know, bouncing around inside the space like a pinball machine, and then it hits what you would call highly specular surfaces, meaning shiny marble floors, that heat's going to just keep bouncing around versus a darker color wood floor. It's going to absorb that heat and hold it, which is what you want. You don't want the heat bouncing around in the space. So yeah, interior design could really be about the thermal environment as well, not just the visual environment.
I don't usually think about it that way. I usually think about it in terms of sound because I'm very sound sensitive. So that to me just seems more obvious. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, I do like mirror because it reflects light so beautifully, but you don't want a lot of mirror sheeted walls, sheathed walls for heat reasons. But yeah, so a lot of it for me is about hand feel. And then same thing with upholstered materials. You know, what are they going to feel like? Are they going to be scratchy? You know, usually in Texas, we're not wearing very many clothes a lot of the times because it's
right.
So anyway, that's kind of where in my mind goes with it is how is it going to sound? But it's interesting to think about it differently as far as that, you know, amount of what did you call it again? The
radiant barrier.
Yeah.
So to the building science consultant, the indoor environment is designed around the human body's experience of sound, of thermal sensation, of visual comfort, of vibrations, odors. The indoor microbiome now is a very important one. Tactile sensations, right? So all the things that go into our central nervous system and just get instantaneously integrated into an experience of, oh, I like this, or, oh, I don't like this. They actually can be broken down and predicted. And so that's fundamentally what building science is. It's like, how is this going to feel?
Yeah, and I can predict that pretty well. I'm good at that.
Oh, gosh.
I can.
I know.
I can look at a space and I tell the clients, you're not going to feel good in this room. You know, I'm exaggerating my point a little bit, but that's a lot of what we talk to clients about. It's just not going to feel good in this space that if you make this choice, it won't feel good. And sometimes I have no idea exactly why. It's just experience.
Yes, that's it.
Tells me and paying attention hyper vigilantly my whole life to how rooms feel and how people behave in rooms that are laid out in a certain way. And, you know, so you can sort of even if you don't have maybe the knowledge, you can kind of.
Yes, absolutely. What you're doing is you're becoming the professional that's on the design function that is saying, here's what we're going to do. And then the installers follow your lead, right? So it's far more accepted in the realm of structural engineering and in architecture and interior design that the builders build what you said, the installers install what the surfaces you said. Mm-hmm. With regard to plumbing, electrical systems, and mechanical systems, those aren't directly observed, so they're often left out of the value equation. They're like, well, can we just make these? No one's going to see the ducts. Let's make it out of ductboard. Let's make it out of flex duct, right? And they're not completely terrible, but generally they can be, those materials, ductboard and flex duct, can be so powerfully abused that they end up being bad materials.
Sometimes when I'm walking through and I see them like these spaghetti things and bent and crisp.
It's a Kraken.
I'm like, I don't think that's going to work.
No, air is heavy. Yes, if people think air is infinitely fluffy because we live in it, but we're like lobster at the bottom of this sea of air stuck to the planet by gravity. Like I said, the average home holds about 2,000 pounds of air. The average mechanical system in one day moves about 40,000 pounds of air through it because it's circulating it. So when you're looking at a duct, you think, okay, tens of thousands of pounds of a fluid are moving through here every day. Yeah.
Right.
That's a mind bender.
So in trying to save the earth with how they were wanting to make things more energy efficient, you said all they did was focus on the cooling. So then what could we do to also help?
Yeah, the enclosure. The enclosure really needs to do the heavy lifting. We need to stop. We need to look at every material as a snapshot in time of a river that goes downstream, let's say, to where that resource came from and how it was delivered to the house. And then it goes upstream to, and what's its service lifetime and where does it go afterward? That is so important to save the planet, right? In fact, energy efficiency, though it's important because we need to pull every level, twist every knob, lever, twist every knob we could, if you are making energy with renewables, with solar or wind, you could argue, let's not go too much down the efficiency road. Let's think about the big issue is carbon emissions. Let's just reduce carbon or carbon equivalent emissions. So get
or plastic.
Right. That's a long way of saying, oh, good grief. Let's not make this lovely house for someone and then insulate it with foamed plastic. Right. It, goodness, if that ever catches fire, do you know who's the firefighters lobby is just so opposed to this intumescent coatings, the fire resistant coatings that go on spray foam, because when they burn, they make tremendous carcinogenic fumes that the firefighters are, they're like 900%, 1700% more likely to get all these different types of cancers. And we're building our houses out of this stuff, right? So it's high in body carbon. It's terrible for the planet. It's terrible for us. There's really good alternatives, and yet we're hooked on it. We just can't get past it.
So you mean foaming houses?
Spray foam insulation. It was a kind of a niche product. It was kind of like compact fluorescent light bulbs, right? A lot of people knew we were going to LEDs, but we did this CFL to get between incandescent and there. So when we as a society recognized, oh, right, we need to contain the air in order to condition the air in order to make it healthy and comfortable. Okay, air barriers. Oh, that means we got to rethink the process of how we build homes, or we just make a different call and substitute cellulose for spray foam. The other way around. Take out cellulose, put in spray foam, because spray foam, it's a thermal control layer and it's an air control layer in one, right? But there are so many good ways to do air control layers now, right? You don't need, in 2020, you certainly, 2022, do not need to rely on your insulation to be your air control layer. And just to just show you how crazy that is, let's say your wall is 3.5 inches thick. The air control property of spray foam, the first inch doesn't cut it. The second inch doesn't cut it. It used to be around 5 inches before spray foam, open cell spray foam, was actually functioning as an air control layer. But then it was very conveniently redefined as 3.5 inches, to which many building science consultants says, I'm a little suspicious of that because that's the width of a 2x4.
Yeah.
But the point is, even if it is 3.5 inches, let's say, okay, it is. Well, that means it's somewhere between outside and the back of your sheetrock is where the air is actually stopped. So we're allowing the humid air to get past the sheathing, past the cornice, you know, all these things into the wall cavity. And we're saying, but it's okay because it will stop before it gets to your sheetrock, right? It's silly, but we don't know this. We don't traffic in this understanding. And you're sure as heck unlikely to hear it from your spray foam installer. And there's other things.
So
there's many other factors why it's a bad idea.
So are you saying we should do like the blown-in?
I would say
cellulose.
I would say we need to look at natural building materials. Hempcrete is not
unrealistic. I remember back in the late 90s, they had old jeans.
Blue jeans is fine. Yeah, anything that's recycled like that. Especially when you have... So one of the things about cellulose that freaks people out is they think the M word, right? So first of all, it's not just mold. It's the whole endomicroecology, right? So let's get past that it's just mold, first of all. Second of all, if you maintain the 2,000 pounds of air in your home in a dry state because you have a dehumidifier, well, you know what? Any moisture in the walls is going to shed it. It's going to naturally move to the air and go out the condensate drain of the dehumidifier. So you can stop being afraid of cellulose. You can stop being afraid of blue jeans. But beyond that, we could have like my next house is going to have hempcrete walls, which is just an insulation. It's not a structure. It sounds like it's concrete, like a wall, but it's going to pack in. Hempcrete can absorb moisture. It can hide. It can buffer it, right? You can cover that with natural earth and plasters instead of sheetrock. Now you have a material that, again, is good for moisture control. It'll absorb VOCs. Amity has a tremendous feel for thermal comfort. It's like the inside of a old cathedral or something. It's a mass wall. It's storing heat, storing cool. So we're just stuck right now. So I have a family in Switzerland, and I talked to some of the builders there, and they're like, oh, the way you build is the way we build buildings for our animals. When we have people in the buildings, we use mass walls, right? So they use terracotta tiles. They use mineral wool insulations, right? So they're very different in terms of the way they do it. And their home code requires homes to last around 100 years. According to NAHB's own standards, the big system failure time in most North American homes is 15 years, which is fine, quote unquote, because people only hold their homes for on average 7 years. But goodness, our disposable building culture, which is evident when you go to Costco or something, right? This is clearly not an enclosure. It's just a suggestion. And we got disposable cups, disposable packaging, and we've put our homes into that mindset inappropriately.
There's also only about 5 people in Switzerland, just to be fair.
It's a very affluent country. Yeah, they are taking a lot of refugees right now from other countries. Yeah, and they're very strict about it.
I was just, yeah.
You can succeed here or you're going to leave.
Yeah. It's just, it is such a challenge. It's a crisis, really, what mm-hmm. we're in with this disposable culture. Yeah. And it's, did you see that show on Netflix? Don't Look Up.
Oh, my goodness. It's classic.
Sorry, that's a little depressing.
Yeah, because it's so true.
It was fantastic. It's so close to home. And it's just so true. It really did. But it's definitely a challenge. I mean, we want to be part of the solution. I mean, that's what we want to do. I think about people. I always talk about it as thinking about how people live from the inside out. Diane thinks about it both at the same yeah. time. But I really start from like the personality and the person and the needs. And I hadn't thought about it as far as the air health. So that brings a lot. This gives me a lot mm-hmm. to think about. Because I hadn't thought about it that way. Like I said, I'm so sensitive to light and to sound, but I hadn't thought about air quality. And so that's really interesting to have that extra kind of layer
yeah.
to, you know, consider.
I would be very grateful to offer this positive message, which is that once good. We pay attention and we say, I want good air quality, it is imminently doable. The systems are available. Yeah. The equipment is stocked locally. The installers are learning how to do it. If you don't find an installer that'll do it, let's just switch to another one. We need that market signaling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so please, we can cheer up that we can do this.
All right, yeah, cool.
I love that. Well, thank you so much.
This is so fun.
Yeah, it's good. Let's end it on a positive note. Yes. Thank you so much again for the time.
We are going to try and save the earth.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And ourselves.
But we have to get educated first. So thank you for educating
You're
us.
Welcome.
And also, I forgot to say that Christoph has his Building Science right. podcast that you guys should listen to. I've listened to some of them, not all of them.
Oh, there is a lot. Yeah.
Fascinating and a little bit mind blowing sometimes.
And what's it called?
The Building Science podcast. Oh, it's on anywhere you find podcasts, iTunes okay. and such. And yeah, we're taking a deep dive into air quality and carbon equivalents, upfront carbon, I think is one of the terms now. So those are important themes.
Mm-hmm. Great. Awesome.
Thank You're you welcome. So thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.